Ladies and gentlemen, tonight, the reigning, defending, undisputed, universal heavyweight champion,
Wildcat Radio 2.0. Bear down, you beautiful people.
What's up, everybody? This is Wildcat Radio 2.0. I'm Adam Green. He's Brett Barry. And, wow, between basketball and then football signing day, there is a lot to talk about this week, Brett. And I think it's all positive stuff, at least.
I like positive stuff.
Makes for
a more fun conversation, let's be real.
It certainly does. And we're going to get to the football signing day stuff in a bit, obviously, pretty much all. But I think there was a new commit that came out on signing day on Wednesday the 1st. But for the most part, we knew who Arizona was going to ink, and they did, which is great. Of course, Arizona added to their coaching staff. We'll talk about that. And we're also going to have a great guest to kind of talk about Arizona basketball, men's basketball's, I guess, bracket prospects, see where they're looking, because obviously this, now that it's February, we start thinking about March. Brett, along those lines, though, Arizona men's basketball, coming off the big sweep of this LA schools at home, is like, okay, they seem to maybe have figured something out. You know, they won a couple different ways. They won with the offense against USC. They won the slugfest against UCLA. That was nice. Now, could they bring it to the road where they hadn't had a road sweep this season? And yeah, they did. in spectacular fashion. Like, Arizona, once again, looked like Arizona. Now, the Washington State game final was 63-58, but Arizona was in control of that game. And then Washington, 95-72. That's Arizona basketball.
Yeah, it was, and also let's talk about how Kirk Carissa got off the schneid with his shooting slump.
Just a little bit.
You know, and again, I'm going to rub it in the noses of all the, they should stop shooting threes thing that I harped on the last 2 weeks. No, but it's, you know, it's hard to win on the road in general. Pullman, you know, Washington State is a better team than their record shows.
And they beat Arizona at McHale Center.
Yeah, and going to Pullman, you know, you're flying probably to Spokane and then driving for an hour, and it's going to be cold AF. And then Washington, that's, you know, you're going to go in and face a tough 2-3. That's an adjustment. That, like, in the first half, Arizona didn't pull away, but oh boy, in that second half, what was it, 57 points in a 20-minute half? My
unreal.
Word. You know, and that's a hard arena to play at against a, you know, a 2-3 zone isn't a gimmick, but you just don't see it well executed all the time. So it's a really positive thing to see, because that you could see how well coached they are and how skilled their bigs are. And then the big thing I take away, I saw some things where people were looking at like midseason of like Pac-12 play awards. You know, before the season started, I said Arizona needs Azulis Tabellis to be clearly the best player on the team to reach their ceiling, and that means like potential Pac-12 player of the year. Mm-hmm. And he is, you know, so far through the Pac-12 play, I think he's got to be the favorite, right? And he showed that against both Washington and Washington State with, well, you know, double doubles in both.
If he's not the favorite, he's certainly among the top two or three chances, especially if Arizona can win the Pac-12, which all of a sudden now is a real thing again. They have a chance to, you know, win the conference once again. And yeah, I want to take a lot out of this, and it's not just, I wasn't, before the LA sweep, I wasn't, you know, down on U of A because of just the Oregon game. You know, it's because of what happened before that game, how they just hadn't looked good. Well, now this is four straight games, and especially the most recent two, where Arizona has looked more like Arizona. And you mentioned Kirk Carissa and the three-pointers, and, you know, he made five against Washington State. He made six against Washington. If he's shooting like that, and he's streaky, but if he's shooting like that, Arizona's almost unbeatable. Because this team has arguably the best low post game, like, duo in college basketball with Tubelis and Umar Balo, who looked more like Umar Balo again, had 21-12 against Washington. We didn't even talk about him yet. But if you're getting 18 points from Kirk Carissa, 6 of 11 threes, making open shots, how do you defend them, right? Because if you sag off of the three-point shooters, and they bring, like, Courtney Ramey made four three-pointers in that game too. Like, him and Kirk Carissa combined to shoot 10 of 21 from threes, and they were 10 of 20. All they each took were three-pointers, Carissa and Ramey. That's all they did. They shot three-pointers. And they made, you know, nearly half of them. If Arizona shoots like that, they're not getting beat. They're just not. So is that going to be something they can rely on every single game? No. They're not that good at three-point shooting. I don't think that Kirk Carissa just magically discovered his 3-point shooting stroke, and he's going to shoot 45% the rest of the way. But if Arizona has that in them, then yeah, they're going to win a lot of games. They're going to be tough to beat no matter how their defense plays.
Yeah, and I think your point is well taken, and it goes back to what we talk about, where it's 3-point shooting looks a lot better when you're taking good shots and not taking bad ones, right? But
it looks a lot better when they go in.
Well, yeah, but if you're taking good shots, you know, Tommy Lloyd, I think, is a believer of Kirk Karisa being a better shooter than his percentages have shown when he's taking good ones, and I think that was proven this last weekend. But also, like, you know, let's just not gloss past, even in the high scoring game, how good Arizona has gotten defensively. I think in KenPom, it's like they went from the 80s to like top 30 in effective defense in like a span of 2 or 3 weeks. That's not something you normally see, right? And the teams that are truly elite are both you know, in the top 25 in both offense and defense. And I think what we've seen is repeatable.
Do you think so? And that's what I'm wondering about the defense, because we've seen really good defensive Arizona teams, especially when Sean Miller was the coach. And you could tell just watching them, there's great defenders on those teams. You know, when you have a Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, you have a Nick Johnson, you have a Tarzewski, you know, you have just guys who are going to lock TJ McConnell, guys who can lock opponents down. Last year's team, you had a Koloko, you had a Ben Mathurin, you had a Dalen Terry, and you felt like, yeah, they could play pretty good defense too. This team doesn't really have, other than Courtney Ramey, doesn't have anyone who made the reputation of being a good defender, like an upper echelon defender. Pella is okay, right? Boswell has kind of shown something, and Cedric Henderson too. But do you think it is repeatable for this team? Because you could look at, say, opponents. Washington's not a great offense. Washington State's not a great offense. UCLA's offense is mostly garbage, really, outside of a couple of great players. Like, is this a real turnaround in that defense, or does it kind of need to be opponent adjusted?
So I'll answer that in a couple of ways. I don't think Arizona has just the stopper that they've had in years past. I just don't think anybody has that physical ability. Courtney Ramey's maybe the closest, right? But I think they play good team defense. And I think Umar Balo and Azulis Tabellis and the whole team in general, like, let's look at an example of why I think they're so well coached on defense. They are incredibly effective when they're contesting a shot at the hoop of going straight up and not getting called for a foul. That is repeatable, and that is purely great coaching, and clearly they've done a lot of training on that.
Yeah.
That lowers the shooting percentage of anybody that's getting close to the basket, whether it shows up as, it's not going to show up as a blocked shot most of the time, but it's going to result in misses and not free throws, right?
Okay.
That stuff is repeatable. You know, playing good rotational defense is repeatable. The strategies, they've been doing a lot of switching on the perimeter because, you know, there's not one great stopper. All right. Well, if everybody's kind of okay, you can switch on ball handoffs and screens, and that helps limit, you know, a good screen being set and penetration, right? It makes the offense have to adjust to that. So there's aspects of it that is repeatable. I still have concerns that, you know, one just stud penetration perimeter player could abuse this defense, but that's where the good shot blockers in the back at the back end with Balo helps. I think Pelle Larsen is critical in this in terms of being repeatable. I think he's got his confidence back.
You know, coming up the bench has been that suits him. It seems like that sixth man role.
I feel much. I'll put it this way: I feel much better about this team defensively today than I did to start the season.
Yeah, and maybe you could look at it and say Pelle Larsen coming off the bench has helped with the defense. Kylan Boswell has been a good defender, and he's almost raising this team's ceiling just a little bit too, or even their floor, because like there's a competent quality backup guard that they have that maybe they didn't have going into this season. So yeah, like it's a good stretch for Arizona at the Washington schools, and of course they get to have the Oregon schools come to town now. Oregon on Thursday, Oregon State on Saturday. And Brett, we'll talk about that in a little bit. But first, let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Brian Bennett of The Athletic. He does their brackets, covers all the brackets, because we're curious about how Arizona's looking, especially with as good as things have been. So let's take a break and talk to Brian afterwards.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
We're back. It's Wildcat Radio 2.0, and we are glad to be joined by Brian Bennett of The Athletic. Covers college basketball, but not say college basketball that, you know, beat writer all the teams, but he's a bracket guy. And of course, you know, the calendar has turned to February, but Arizona fans are focused on March. Brian, welcome to Wildcat Radio 2.0.
Thanks for having me. The best thing about February is it's almost March, right?
Yeah, right. And that's kind of a double-edged sword for Arizona fans because you get so excited about March, and other than one year, you know, more than, you know, 20 years ago, it's always it ends in disappointment. But right now, Arizona has been trending towards, I've seen like a 2 seed. Some people see them as a 1 seed. A few weeks ago, that didn't seem possible. But now they're looking pretty good. Just as we sit, you know, February 1st, people might listen to this February 2nd, February 3rd, whenever. But how are the Wildcats looking, or how are they trending in your eyes?
Yeah, trending well. Obviously, the last several, I guess, handful of games, they've played a lot better defense. I think that had been kind of their one Achilles heel, and, you know, obviously the win over UCLA was a big one. And, you know, they have a really, really nice resume. Not only are they 7-2 in quad one, but they have some of the best wins, I think, you know, in the country, having, you know, beaten Indiana, having beaten Creighton, you know, having beaten UCLA, having beaten Tennessee. So it's a, you know, it's a really, really strong resume. Not only do they have the quad one wins, but they have the high end quad one wins at the selection committee really looks at. So, you know, going into tonight, and as we talk here, Tennessee struggling a bit at Florida, which would be good news for Arizona, even though they beat Tennessee. So right now I have them as my top number 2 seed. And, you know, I think it could change. I think the committee could look at it differently. They could be a 1 seed. And for them, I think the most important thing is to get that West region and get that Las Vegas region would be huge for them.
Yeah. So I think you maybe just stole where I wanted to go as a Homer Arizona fan. I try to be unbiased, but I look at all these bracketologies and I see everybody, you know, ranking Arizona fairly highly and seeding them highly in their bracketology, but they'll be behind teams like, you know, UCLA or Tennessee or some other schools that there's not as many common opponents. And I guess I think you maybe hit on this, but I look at somebody like Tennessee, or I look at some of these other like Houston's, and I struggle to see who has a better, you know, resume in terms of quality wins. And there's plenty of questionable losses in college basketball. So I guess in your perspective as an unbiased person, one, who has a better resume than Arizona right now to get a 1 seed? And are the unexplained losses just a part of modern college basketball is my second question.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's two teams out there right now you could say for sure have a better resume than Arizona. Not, you know, a ton better, but I do think better. Purdue, first of all, only lost one game to a Rutgers team that's probably in that 5 seed range, lost it basically on a basket at the buzzer. A team that, you know, has just been great all year long and has the National Player of the Year and, you know, has, I think, the second most quad one wins in the country. Purdue is a pretty easy choice for the number one overall seed. There's just nothing you can knock them for. And then I think Alabama, with the great schedule they've played, they won at Houston. You know, they've had some big, big wins. Didn't look great this past weekend against Oklahoma, but they've done enough there that I think they're still on that one line no matter what. And then, you know, Kansas, they had a short little 3-game losing streak there, but they have 9 quad one wins, which is more than anybody in the country. That's 2 more than Arizona has. I think Kansas is right there on the 1 seed line. But you're right. Other than that, I mean, Houston is a really, really good team, but they haven't played nearly the schedule that Arizona has played. And I think it's really going to come down to what this committee values, and every committee is different. But they look at a lot of things. If you were just looking at body of work, I think Arizona would be right there on the 1 seed. But if you look at the metrics, which are on the team sheets, and some committees use those a little bit more than others, Arizona's metrics are just not quite good enough for a one seed. You know, 12 at KenPom, 10 in the net, 13 in BPI, 9 in Sagarin. Then they're 5 in KPI and 4 strength of record, which are a little bit more results-oriented. But just looking at their efficiency metrics, which the committee does look at, they look more like a two seed. So, you know, and I think a lot of that is, you know, those bad losses they had, which can be forgiven to a certain extent, but, you know, losing to Washington State at home, that's only a Q2 loss now, but that's a lot worse than anything Alabama or Purdue or Kansas has done. Anything, a lot, it's about par with what something Tennessee has done, and probably worse than anything Houston has done other than the Temple loss. So
I can get behind that because just the eye test, right? Arizona was a one seed last season, and it was pretty obvious why they were a one seed. Granted, they didn't get past the Sweet 16, but you could see that with them. They were that good. I don't look at this Arizona team this season and say that's one of the top four teams in college basketball. I mean, I know they're ranked fifth right now, but, you know, like, how does this team stack up? Because, yeah, there's some of the metrics you're talking about. They're not doing poorly. They're better than average, sure, but they're not elite at these things. Like, granted, there is still time. There's chance, you know, the Oregon series this week, and they get UCLA and USC to finish the regular season to get, you know, bolster that resume. But how does this specific Arizona Wildcats team look compared to maybe what we saw last season or other years where they were competing for a one seed?
Yeah, I can't go back super far, but sure. It's been a while since they were in a contention. But, you know, last year I think they were pretty dominant, you know, kind of tore through the Pac-12, were really good all year long. I think the offense was more powerful than this year's offense. So this year's offense is really good again. It's always going to be, I think, under Tommy Lloyd. That's going to be a calling card. But, you know, I think this is a really good team. I mean, I look at the top two seed lines, and you've got, as we mentioned, Purdue, Alabama, Kansas, Tennessee, Houston, Arizona, Texas, UCLA. I think all eight of those teams are pretty, pretty close. And, you know, other than Purdue, I think being a pretty clear number one, I think once you get past that, you could probably toss them all in a hat, pick one out. You know, I think UCLA is maybe falling off just a tad, but, you know, I think I was struggling with this week. You know, who are my other four one seeds? And is it Tennessee? Is it Kansas? Is it Houston? Is it Arizona? You know, they're all right there. So I think for Arizona, you know, if they just keep winning, you know, if they end up being the Pac-12 champs, they win the tournament, they have a good chance of being a one seed, especially. I think the committee likes it sometimes when they can make it geographically sound. Making Arizona the one seed out west makes a lot of sense, and it keeps teams close. So I think they're right there. There's no dominant team this year except maybe Purdue. So I think Arizona is as good as any team in the country.
So it sounds like what you're saying, I think it kind of goes off of what Brett was talking about earlier too. There's a lot of parity. You know, there's not a big gap between the very best team and the eighth best team. And I don't know if there's a bigger gap between the eighth best team and the 12th best team. But when you try to jumble it up, it's like Arizona's in contention, but they're not far and away better than anyone else. But obviously no one's far and away better than them. Is that normal to see it like this, kind of jumbled up at the top like that?
It just depends. I mean, there are some years that are different. Just a couple of years ago, you might remember, I think Gonzaga and Baylor were just kind of running away with it. They were the clear 1-2 teams in the preseason, that way all season, and they met in the title game, right? So right. They were clearly a cut above everybody. You know, last year I think there were probably 3 or 4 teams that seemed, you know, ahead of everybody. Kansas, everybody kind of going in the tournament, figured they were good. Gonzaga, a couple other teams. This year, I just think it's a deeper field. I think there's probably, you know, 12 teams that if you looked at and said, this team's going to win it all, I'm like, okay, I believe that. If there's probably 20 teams, you could make a reasonable case for being a Final Four team without crazy upsets. And I don't necessarily think that means that there's no great teams. I just think there's a lot of really, really good teams this year, and maybe there's a great team that'll emerge, but Arizona is right there, you know, to me, right at the top and among the 6 to 8 best teams in the country.
Well, to kind of to take off on that, you know, when it comes to bracketology and seeding, you know, Arizona fans maybe pay more attention than the national media does or the selection committee does in, you know, late January, early February. But there's 3 straight games now where, if you believe like the KenPom adjusted offense and adjusted defense, Arizona went from in the 80s to, like, you know, around 30. Mm-hmm. And they maybe flipped a switch there. If that is sustained, how much does that differentiate Arizona in those kind of advanced metrics beyond just the win-loss category?
Yeah, I think that helps a lot. I think we've seen the committee before where teams maybe even had good metrics. An example to me last year was Tennessee last year. Was once again a really, really good defensive team, not a very good offensive team. And I think the committee penalized them for that because they had a resume of a two seed, absolutely. But the committee gave them a three seed. And I think they had some doubts about, you know, if they had enough offense to really be good in the tournament. And, of course, they didn't go very far. But I think, you know, I think they look at those things, your offensive, defensive metrics. And obviously, if the better defense you play, Arizona's always going to be good offense. It's going to help your overall efficiency metrics, which are going to help your overall metrics. So I think the way they've been playing, starting really with that UCLA game and you know, and rolling in the last couple of games, if they can keep that kind of defensive effort, yeah, it's going to help their efficiency numbers. I think it's going to help them win a lot of games. And I think, you know, they're going to keep rising. And let's also remember that none of this stuff happens in a vacuum. Fans forget that sometimes. They think, oh, my team has moved down, other teams moved up, but it's not really that. It's what's everybody else doing. And other teams are in conference play now, and they're going to lose games, and they're going to bow out of their conference tournaments early. Things are going to happen. So if you keep winning, you're going to move up.
So naturally, people are going to want, or Arizona fans are going to want to see Arizona out west, and you mentioned how they have a really good shot at getting that one seed. I think the most recent one I saw from you, I think, had Houston as the one, but Arizona as the two. Is it kind of like a three-team race for that number one seed? Obviously, things can change if teams start falling off a cliff and losing, but is it Arizona, Houston, UCLA, and maybe Gonzaga as the options for the Western number one seed for those top couple spots, or could you see someone else sneaking in and maybe stealing one of those Westerns, like that top seed?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I think for right now, I think it's a six-team race for the one seed line. I think it's pretty clear. Purdue, Alabama, Tennessee, Kansas, Arizona, Houston are the clear front runners right now for the number one seed. So then it becomes a matter of, you know, who gets seeded out west. And I think it's pretty clear that whoever comes out of the Pac-12, as long as they're in, you know, pretty good shape, is probably going to get that two seed out west at worst. So I think, you know, being like the number, I have them as the number one, two seed going in to tonight, which is great. I mean, because they end up, it's not that much different really than being right. One seed. I got them in Kansas's region, and you know, in Arizona, Kansas Elite Eight would be incredible, but they get to play in Vegas, and that they would be full of Arizona fans, you know. So, you know, even if they're the number two seed, but they get to stay out west, I think that's just as good. You know, the only really issue I think between like the first number one and the last number one is maybe you get to avoid the overall number one or overall number two seed. But the thing is, you got to win a bunch of games. You don't know if the other one seed's getting there. Half the time they don't. So, you know, and you can win coming out of anywhere, but you know, if you can go to Vegas, I think no matter what your seed is, I think that's just a huge, huge advantage for Arizona, the fan base they're going to bring there.
Well, I think you just answered the question I wanted to ask you philosophically for Arizona. Is it better to be the two seed in the West or the one seed in any other bracket?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to look at that. I mean, does having a lot of your fans out West mean a whole lot? Like that, we've seen lots of examples of teams basically playing in their backyard in a regional final lose. I think there's some examples of Arizona being out west tonight.
Yes, absolutely there are.
Yeah, and I don't want to bring up the old bad memories, but I think we all know what I'm talking about there. And so, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to have to beat some really, really good teams, and especially in a Sweet 16 Elite Eight situation, it's going to come down to you're going to have to play great, and you're going to have to beat a really, really good team. And the fan support helps, sure, and you're not having to travel too much helps. Especially the Western teams, you don't want to be out east, I don't think. You know, your body clock gets all messed up, that sort of thing. But for the most part, it's great if you can stay home. It's great for your fans. But I think at the end of the day, you got to play your best basketball.
Certainly, yeah. Even as a one seed doesn't guarantee you anything. It's supposed to be an easier road. But even with a parity across college basketball, one seeds don't have as simple a road. We've seen some challenges there. And, of course, Arizona was a one seed last year. It didn't work out for them too well. As we let you go here, as we wrap up here, I guess maybe the big picture where Arizona stands right now, February 1st, they got some big games left. Like, what do you see, I guess, like in terms of what they need to do to get that one seed? Or is like, is it just way more perilous to get that one seed? Because if they slip up one time, if they lose to UCLA at the end of the season, they lose to Oregon or something, is that kind of knock them off and probably for good? Or do they kind of have that road where it's like, hey, because they're not in a vacuum, other programs, other teams are losing games too, where Arizona just needs to handle their business the best they can and I guess let the chips fall where they may?
Yeah, I think that's well said. And I think, again, as we mentioned, nothing happens in a vacuum, so it doesn't matter what other teams are doing. It's hard for me to see Purdue falling off that one line unless they just collapse. I do think the Big 12 champion deserves a one seed, assuming they don't take on a bunch of losses. That league is just incredible. If you're not watching the Big 12 games like tonight, please do, because it is something else. And
I think Arizona fans are hoping Arizona joins the Big 12.
Yeah,
soon enough. Like that's.
I see that. So yeah. So then you know you've got Alabama, you got Tennessee, and you got a lot of competition. The one thing that's going to hurt Arizona is just the Pac 12 does not offer a lot of opportunities for big wins. You know, they're going to play, obviously, end the year at UCLA and at USC, and those would be two big road wins that they could get. They would be huge. But you look at the rest of the schedule, and it's, you know, what does beating Oregon State or Cal or Stanford or Colorado, what does that do for you? Not a whole lot. It's not going to do much to bolster your resume. So, yeah, you really need to avoid losing any of those games. Winning them is not going to help you that much, especially when other teams are – if you play in the Big 12, you're playing a quad one game every single night. Whereas, you know, Arizona's got what, maybe two or three left in the regular season. So yeah, they're going to have to probably, you know, win just about every game the rest of the way, to be in contention for that one seed, as tough as that sounds.
Gotta love that opportunity for bad losses, but not a lot of opportunity for big wins. But that's Arizona's lot. And as long as they win their games, they'll be okay. Well, Brian Bennett, you can find him on Twitter at @GBrianBennett. Does, according to his bio, we'll just go straight from there. Senior editor and purveyor of fine artisanal brackets for The Athletic College Basketball. I won't read the second line there because that's for you, but really nice guy. We appreciate your time here. And yeah, maybe we'll catch up with you down the road when the brackets are finalized and kind of see what your take is on what the selection committee did.
Would love to do it. My favorite time of year. Thanks for having me.
So that's Brian Bennett. And Brett, that's kind of the trouble that Arizona has now, especially with the remaining schedule, is that there may not be really any big wins, save for UCLA, but there are a lot of opportunity for bad losses. So if you're Arizona, I guess all you can do is win all the games in front of you, no matter what they do for your seeding chances.
Yeah, and I think that starts off right away with another game in the Vengeance Tour, right, Adam? Like, you know, Arizona got embarrassed by Oregon, who's probably better talent-wise than what their record shows, kind of like Washington State. They're kind of an enigma, but it's a, you know, February Dana Altman is the best Dana Altman, and their talent level is really high. So, you know, there's a game to come in on Thursday. It'll be a nice one to hopefully have a vengeance game. And like you said, win the games in front of you, and then hopefully you close the season out against the LA schools, make your resume as good as possible, and head into the Pac-12 tournament.
Yeah, and it kind of, Brian was speaking to one of the tough things for Arizona, too, is that the Pac-12 doesn't offer a lot of great wins, right? It's kind of like you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like, yeah, if you beat Oregon, it's a nice win for Arizona, but it doesn't really do much to move the needle in terms of, like, their seeding potential. And same thing with Oregon State or Cal or Stanford or Utah or Colorado or even ASU now, or probably USC. Like, they might have one big game left on their schedule in terms of what seeding could do, and that's UCLA on the road, the last game of the regular season. And, you know, I guess that's just kind of the lot that Arizona has to deal with, right? Like, you can only beat those teams. And what's kind of tricky, or what makes it tough, is, like you mentioned, Oregon's an enigma. They throttled Arizona a few weeks ago.
Sure did.
You know, Washington State, who Arizona just beat Arizona in Tucson. Utah kicked the crap out of Arizona earlier in the season. And when there's not a lot of big games on Arizona's schedule, Arizona's a big game on pretty much everyone else's schedule. And that's something that they have to, it's a dynamic they generally have to deal with every year. When Arizona's across your chest, you're going to get an opponent's best shot. But when you are their chance to make a statement and they're not a chance for you to do the same, it can be tough to get up for them. And you can get caught off guard, like by Oregon maybe a couple of weeks ago when it was a blowout.
Well, I think that's where the, you know, play the vengeance card when it's appropriate to keep those, you know, 18, 19 year olds up for those games. And when the, you know, the opponents are having that energy, you know, it kind of goes back to the consistency is mental toughness argument I bring up a lot of the time. And I think that's what we're going to see in the next couple of weeks. Like, Arizona should beat Oregon. I think the line came out and there was like, what, 8.5 in favor of Arizona.
But like, other than like the Arizona we saw last week, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
The Arizona we saw
Which
you know,
one
two weeks
them?
Before that, mean, that's what's so challenging about this. It maybe speaks to the parity. Like, Oregon is a better team than their record, we think, right? When the last time we saw them, when we watched them, they certainly were. So, like, it is, I mean, Oregon's a good team. It's a good program. Dana Altman's always going to have them ready to play in Tucson. Arizona never has it easy with Oregon. And yet they're an 8.5-point favorite going into this game, which speaks to maybe how bad of a loss this would be if Arizona was to lose it.
Yeah, but to kind of pair together the parity argument and the there's not that many resume builders on this, okay, beat the teams in front of you and let parity do its damage to the other schools, right?
Yeah.
that's where it goes back to, you can only beat the teams in front of you. Oregon is a good enough team you should not take for granted at even in Tucson, right?
Well, especially having lost to them just a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Utah, you should be able to come back and be, I think I tweeted during that game, like, I look forward to Arizona smoking them in Tucson by 30, which may not happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if they win comfortably, right? If even Oregon State is a sneaky, challenging young team, like, there's some talent on that team that's not there yet, but, like, if you don't show up, they will make that game a challenge, right?
Yeah.
But if you beat everyone in front of you,
Well, if Arizona never loses another game this season, things will be fine.
If they lose one game against USC or UCLA the rest of the regular season, I feel real good about them being a one seed, because I think parity will play out on the other teams, and they will, if the last, month has taught us anything, it's that parity is the norm in modern college basketball. People need to come to grips with that, right?
Yeah, and that is a tough thing. Even Brian mentioned it, how nobody plays in a vacuum, right? I mean, certain teams suck, but no one plays in a vacuum, in so much that, Arizona loses games and everybody's like, oh, the sky is falling. And I was part of that too a few weeks ago. They were playing bad basketball, but other teams have the same issues. Does that mean anything other than, like, that Arizona's going to be fine come tournament time? No, it doesn't mean anything like that. But it means that college basketball is such where you're going to lose some games, probably lose some games that you don't think you should have lost. As long as you win enough games, and of course, as we all know, if you win enough games in March, things are okay. So for Arizona, Oregon State, to me, you don't want to lose at home. You can't lose at home again this season. You already lost one game at McHale Center. That was inexcusable. There's no one left on your schedule that's coming to Tucson that should beat you or should give you a really, really good game and good test if you're playing well, right? So if Arizona comes out and just takes care of business, they win these two games. But more than the games themselves and more than what it could or could not do for their resume, I just want to see them keep playing well. It's all been like, okay, since the last time they played Oregon, they showed a little bit against USC, a little bit more against UCLA, a little bit more against Washington State, and they showed everything against Washington. Is that the new Arizona? Is that the new trend? And I'm not saying that, if they play an ugly game or whatever, that they're falling apart again. No. But it's nice to see if they flip the switch. If Pelle Larsen off the bench, Cedric Henderson in the starting lineup is a thing. Colin Boswell getting 18 minutes a game is the thing. If Kirk Creasa has suddenly found consistency. If these are all things that are, like, true, that they can maintain, then Arizona's probably not going to lose a game, at least until maybe UCLA. And Arizona's going to be a one or a two seed. And they're going to be a very dangerous team come tournament time.
I think that's completely right. I'm looking ahead at the schedule, and that's a dangerous thing to do. But,
well, not for us.
Well, but Arizona's got to be favored at least in the next seven, if not eight, right? Like, certainly up to the USC game on the road, and maybe even through that game, right? But, that's not to say that there's not losable games. The thing that's working in Arizona's favor in that time period, like the road games until you go to LA, are Cal and Stanford.
But
it's hard to win on the road, but they should sweep that.
Look at Arizona's losses this season. Would either of those teams been teams you said, well, they could give Arizona trouble going into the game? Not really. I mean, we can retcon and be like, oh, yeah, well, Utah on the road, that could be tricky, or Washington State. No. Oregon, like, those are not teams that you look at the schedule and say, from what we've seen of those teams, say they should beat a good, one or two seed Arizona. No. So, like, Arizona absolutely can lose to everybody. They've shown they can lose to pretty much anybody, but they've also shown the ability to beat the really good teams, which is why their quad one wins, why they are sitting on that one or two line, because of you beat Tennessee, you beat Indiana, you beat Creighton, you beat San Diego State. Like, they have some really good wins on that schedule too. So they've shown the range, good and bad.
Yeah. I think the most inexplicable loss will remain Washington State.
Yes.
Like Utah, I think, is better than we thought when they played the first time. And I think Brandon Carlson is a bad matchup for Arizona's bigs because he's a perimeter scorer. So, like, you know, a bad matchup can offset, you know, the imbalance in the overall team quality at times. But, yeah, you know, if Arizona plays an average game in the next seven games for them, if they play their game, they should win. If the defense, yeah, if the defense is what it has been in the last three, they should win every one of those games. Right. So it, and that's where it goes back to the, is it repeatable or not? And I think for the most part it is, but you know, it we'll see. We're talking about teenagers 2 months out into the future.
That's true. So, yeah. So, I mean, every weekend is a big weekend, if not to, you know, make it get a big win, but to avoid suffering a bad loss as Arizona heads towards the NCAA tournament. I guess the Pac-12 tournament first, but then the NCAA tournament. You know, it's Oregon State. Arizona's number five again, top five team. So, you know, they're going to get the Ducks and the Beavers best this weekend at the McHale Center. So, Brett, let's take a break, and we come back. National Signing Day, the other one, it happened. You know, Jed Fish talked about the class. It's hard to keep track of all the signing days. And, you know, most of pretty much everyone that Arizona was going to get, they got that. We knew that ahead of time before Wednesday the 1st. They did add a couple of, there was a couple new guys there in there. One was pretty good surprise, a wide receiver. And, of course, Arizona added the coaching staff. So let's talk about it after a break. We're back, and it's, is it kind of weird to be, you know, Arizona men's basketball is top five. The women's are playing great too. And we're like talking football. And I know it's signing day, but it's football in that, hey, look at what Arizona's doing, right? Like, I mean, we knew about Leviticus Sua. That was last week's show. You know, he officially signed. The big news out of signing day, which happened on February 1st, was Arizona got receiver Devin Hyatt, who I guess is like a high three-star, four-star type of player. I mean, Arizona's not exactly short on receivers, but this guy looks like a player.
Well, I mean, he comes from IMG Academy in Florida, like powerhouse program, especially for like skill level players. And if you go look at his offer list, you know, it's not exactly the no name schools that we were competing with a few years ago. Like, you know, he's got a scholarship offer from Auburn, Alabama, a couple other big programs. So for a signing day surprise, okay, that's great.
That's like when Dorian Singer transferred, right? He went from walk-on to transfer to USC. He was like, oh, no, I feel like receivers are going to want to play in this system. Going to play with, as long as Arizona has a quarterback, and like Jaden Delora is a good quarterback, and you look at the quarterback room with Braden Dorman and Noah Fifita, you feel pretty good about what they have in the future. But like, why wouldn't you if you're a receiver? They had three star receivers last season and a tight end who had a good number of catches, right? Like, that's what you want. So, I mean,
and that was with the offensive line that should be getting better in future years than it has been in last year with the great offense, right? Like,
yeah, you think
there, you know, it's, there's a lot of positive trends for Jed Fish and staff. And, you know, like you said, the quarterback room looks like it's set, if not even overloaded in the next couple years. Right. So I think I even saw a quote somewhere where he was like, they pass the ball, you know, 80% of the time, which maybe that stays, maybe it doesn't, but
I would hope not.
Well, I mean, if you
got good running backs too, run the ball a little.
Sure. Running backs can catch the ball too, Adam.
True. That's true. But I'm also anticipating more leads late in games that they'll want to run the ball and milk the clock, you know.
I like where your head's at.
There you go.
There's no way to not see this as what a nice little signing day coup for an already solid class. And you know, does this preclude the USC wide receiver transfer? I don't think so, but you know, we'll see how that plays out. There's still going to be roster movement through spring football, which I think also got announced today. I think it starts on what, March 13th, and about a month later for the spring game. So we're only what, 6 weeks away at most. I don't know. I'm a basketball guy first and foremost, but I get most jazzed about the upside of Arizona football these days sometimes, Adam.
Yeah, well, especially when it's good news. Granted, it's off-season Jed Fish, which is hard. It's tough to beat off-season Jed Fish, of course. They also added the coaching staff, Dwayne Aquina, a familiar name. He's going to be, I believe, a senior defensive assistant secondary coach, like an analyst. So he's not the new cornerbacks coach, and yet he's going to be there. Seems like I know Fish in his press conference said, quote, "I believe we signed a 5-star coach." You know, the guy's experienced. He knows Tucson. He's coached some really good players. It's hard to see this as anything but a value add for a coaching staff that, you know, lost a pretty good coordinator, pretty good coach in Dwayne Walker. But this is a start to replacing him and just bolstering what Arizona has.
I mean, Dwayne Aquino would have been a great, you know, replacement for Dwayne Walker as a secondary coach. The fact that he's coming in as an analyst, you know, with his pedigree as a recruiting powerhouse, you know, his connection to the poly community, you know, his success as just a talent developer. Like, there's no way to not view this as a huge coup. And if that means...
Is that the second time you've used coup?
I mean, maybe.
In this segment, I think?
Possibly. I don't know. I can't remember 30 seconds ago, Adam.
It is a goldfish.
Adam. It is Adam. Your name's Adam, right?
Yeah, last time I checked.
All right. I struggle to recall sometimes. You're very forgettable. No, but like if he's coming in as an analyst, it's not only just a big addition in terms of what he brings to the program, but if that means there's also still room for another great addition to that staff, you know, consider my interest peaked.
Yeah, that works.
I didn't want to say coup again. Now you've got me self-conscious.
Well, if you said consider my interest cooed, that wouldn't make any sense, actually. Not even a lot. It wouldn't make any. So peaked is a much better word because, you know, contextually it fits. So good job.
Thank you.
But otherwise, no other surprises on signing day. Arizona got the guys that had committed to them. And the linebacker room looks a lot better through the portal and through traditional recruiting. Obviously, the quarterback room, the receiver room, the running back room. They look like a pretty good, like last year's team we knew in the offseason. We thought in the offseason going into spring, I was like, okay, they've upgraded the offense, right? You got quarterback, you got some skill position talent. Like, let's see what they can do. And they could do a lot offensively. Now they've seen a lot of defensively. Now, granted, Devin Hyatt's a receiver, but they had a lot to the linebacker room. They had some defensive linemen, the secondary, and everything. And you're thinking, okay, will the defense take that same leap, or at least a similar one, and go from really bad to, I wouldn't expect great, but decent, pretty good? Because if it can, then Arizona's going to win a lot of games this season.
Yeah, I don't know if it's possible for Arizona's defense to make the same kind of just ridiculous leap that they went from god awful to pretty darn good offensively. But if that offense maintains and even slightly improves and your defense goes to average, we're talking bowl game, friend. And I'm pretty excited about it.
That'd be neat in year three. But you know, there's a lot, like I said, there's gonna be a lot more roster movement with the portal and everything. We'll see what happens on spring ball, which does start, what do you have, March 13th? I want to say.
I think that's right.
Yeah. Big day around these parts.
We don't prep for show.
Why would we do that?
It makes it less fresh, Adam.
When it's news to us as well, then it sounds a lot more like, oh, are you saying? Wow, I had no idea. But yeah, March 13th, and of course the spring games in April. I think April 15th. And I don't know, maybe we'll go down for the spring game this year. That'd be kind of fun. I was trying to go down last year, and I did not make it. Things kind of happened. But it'd be kind of fun to go down to that, especially if the weather holds up and is not horrible.
I was there. It was a nice time. In fact, it was hot AF.
Yeah, I remember being like, I guess it's not the worst reason thing I'm not here. It looked boiling out there. So yeah. I watched it on TV, as all the cool people do. They watch college football spring games on the Pac-12 network.
I didn't realize the cool people even had Pac-12 network.
Huh. I mean, I have Pac-12 network, so
You're helping my argument, not yours, Adam.
I'm helping some argument. I don't know which one it is. But that's going to do it for this week's show. Make sure you can find us on Twitter at Wildcat Radio AZ. That is the handle. You know, we'll do some mailbags. We'll do a mailbag next week or something. We'll see what's going on. But sure. Even if without that, feel free to just tweet us with some questions or some thoughts. We can read those on the air. Of course, you can find us on iTunes and Spotify. If you're on iTunes, leave us a rating and a review. We'll read that review on the show, too, good or bad. We just like to be... You know, we like your thoughts. We do.
Validate, well, I do. Validate or criticize us. You know, the opposite of love isn't hate, Adam. It's indifference. And when you're not writing reviews, it feels indifferent.
Dang.
Just saying.
I mean, you're not wrong, but I don't want to put that on our listeners. Like, we appreciate them, even if they don't leave us a review.
I'm trying to find new and creative ways to neg them into reviews.
Fair enough. Thanks again to Brian Bennett from The Athletic for joining us to talk about some Arizona basketball tournament. And yeah, we'll see what happens with the Oregon games this weekend. I don't think there's any more football that should be happening. Maybe a defensive backs coach finally, but whatever happens with Arizona Athletics, we'll talk about it on next week's show. And until then, remember to bear down.
Bear down.